So this brings us to the estimator's dilemma. And what is that? So while estimating, the situation becomes bad when someone with no formal training in software engineering and little experience of estimating software tasks is asked by the senior to give estimates. And this is a dangerous situation, right? So you don't have much experience in this particular field from a fresher's perspective, or he doesn't have the right kind of skill sets to estimate the project in the correct manner that it is supposed to, it's a tough situation. So in such a situation, the person is forced in a difficult situation. If their estimates come up short, they will be penalized for their next review, right? So it's a tough situation. Maybe say there are no estimators in place, and that's where a new person has to be brought up to speed. But in my opinion, in such cases, rather than putting an absolutely new person on the job, it's important that this particular person shadows a seasoned estimator, so that the new person learns about the different techniques of estimation, maybe learns the nuances of how things have to be estimated in the right methodology, taking into account the different techniques, etc., before providing a real estimate. In such a situation, because the person doesn't really know or is new to the entire business, he or she would, kind of pad up the estimate, because no one would want to give something that is too aggressive, which is not possible to be delivered, right? So in such a situation where you have absolutely new people, then there could be only two scenarios. Either they could pad up the estimates, or provide something which is ridiculously aggressive, right? In any which way case, they would be dishonest to the overall approach. The seniors will eventually catch this and start cutting down on any estimates that the person provides, right? Because once, say, he would have padded up a lot of cushion in the overall project delivery timelines. Once or twice, that's okay, but then, say, the third time, obviously it meets the eye, and from that time onwards, whatever estimate that the person provides, typically the seniors would start, trimming down the estimates that the person has provided. So either of these options can lead to an unrealistic approach and throw off the entire project planning phase. So what we are doing in this particular case is that, say, someone who is absolutely new, who is given an estimate, which is padded up, right? There's a lot of cushion built into that particular estimate. But every time, if that particular estimate has to be trimmed down, then what's the sense of, or what's the purpose of that particular estimator giving the estimate? Any which ways, the estimate has to be reworked, which again takes a little amount of time and some resources working on the same estimate. So then what is the whole purpose of the person giving unrealistic estimate? So these estimators feel like they are left hanging without little support, and if their supervisors see that their estimates are off, they could end up distrusting them in the future. So as I said, the ideal scenario is that the estimators should work along with some senior estimators, so that they learn the skills that are required for estimating the job, They shadow the resources so that they understand what are the nuances of the business, the nitty-gritties, what are the important points that need to be kept in mind while working on some businesses which are very peculiar, say some projects that are very peculiar. So say if there's a project on say a software code that needs to be delivered in one particular programming language, basis say working with a senior estimator, the young estimator understands that this kind of projects take a little more time as compared to other projects. So then they can build into their learning curve and start estimating better. But if they are kind of left hanging, where they are asked to create estimates on their own, and if they have padded up a lot of cushion or that margin of safety, that means the supervisors will start distrusting them. Again, which would lead to a lot of rework, which means again there is some time loss that happens because of the rework. Padded estimates, where the team intentionally overestimates in order to give themselves that extra time, that extra space, that extra margin of cushion, are a chronic source of estimates that are too high. So what happens is, because you've padded up a lot of cushion, that means you factored in a lot of resources that were not needed in the first place. A lot of resources also mean that the cost that you are paying to the resources is high, which means the inherent project cost is high. So that's one important aspect. The other aspect is extra cushion in terms of the time it takes to deliver the project. Again, they would have taken a lot of cushion there, which means the overall project timelines are stretched. Senior managers giving unrealistic or overly aggressive deadlines are a chronic source of estimates that are too low. Again, as I said, either padding up the estimates or giving unrealistic or overly aggressive estimates are also not really good, right? Which means a lot of undue pressure on the project teams to deliver, a lot of aggressive timelines, which might not really go well with the internal stakeholders, and they might not be able to adhere to those timelines, which means loss of credibility in front of the end customer. In both the cases, either overestimating or underestimating, it leads to major problems. So this gives a sense of unrealistic expectation with the end stakeholders. Anytime an estimate is generated, everyone wants to know how accurate is the estimate. That is, how close is it to the, how close are the derived numbers to reality? So say you would have used say a parametric method of estimation. So parametric method of estimation, if you recollect, it's based on a mathematical model. So say typically used for construction, where you're given the price per square feet of construction, right? And using that empirical model, you've arrived at a certain cost estimate. So everyone is generally in a frame of mind to understand how close is that to the real on ground scenario. How close is the estimate to reality? The reality will be only known once you finish the project execution. But it also means that because you had set up an initial estimate in terms of time, how close were you to deliver the promise that you had made? And hence, all estimates carry an inherent element of uncertainty, because you don't really know whether your estimate is going to be closest to the actual time it took to deliver, or it fell short of the time. In either case, you are wanting to know how the accuracy of the estimate had failed. The most important part of proposing the estimate is to ensure that it builds a lot of confidence in the stakeholders, and they believe the numbers presented are authentic and achievable in reality. So whenever, say, a project timelines are discussed, generally the project manager discusses this with the business stakeholders. They would give the list of action items, the list of tasks that are completed in that particular phase, which makes the business owners give the assurance or have the confidence in the project manager, saying that they have understood the requirements and then have plotted the requirements in a proper manner. People believe more when providing an unrealistic range of possible estimation numbers. Why is this so? Because everyone wants to look at maybe a more aggressive timelines. So from a business stakeholder's perspective, they would want this any project to get over really quickly, right? And that is the reason why they believe more when it's estimate that is as close to accuracy as possible. So when the estimator has listed down all the project scope in accordance with the business requirements, he's captured the right scope, he's captured the WBS structure really well, he's put the stakeholders and the different tasks in a WBS structure properly. So looking at the estimation methodology, the stakeholders or the business stakeholders in this case would tend to believe in these numbers, because they were arrived at using a more methodological approach rather than say getting influenced by a human bias. In reality, there is never a single estimate for a project. So again, I mean, it starts with an early estimate, and the project will have multiple different iterations as they move on. So it's, unless it's like a say a thing like a waterfall model where things are set up from day one, it's absolutely static. The business objectives are known and the functionality is known and everything is known, so there is no unknown in this particular case, then yes, everything will go as per plan. It should go as per plan. But in most cases, estimates are quite a iterative method. So they will keep evolving as the business needs evolve, as more and more data points are obtained. As a result, during the early estimation phase, the estimation range can be broad, but it can then be customized or tend to be more tapered as and when you learn more new things about the project, right? So again, as we studied in one of the approaches, so it starts with a unknown universe, and then the whole idea is to keep on asking more questions until you unearth all the unknowns, and then move from a unknown universe to a known universe. So that's where you know everything, so that you have the right set of data points to capture the inputs. Factors affecting the quality of estimates: garbage in, garbage out. I mean, it's absolutely applicable for the estimation process. The quality and the accuracy of the estimate will depend upon what is being fed, what is the input data being used for the estimation project. If you are feeding in something that is unrealistic or having unrealistic parameters, then the output that you will get is will be absolutely vague. So, and hence the saying garbage in, garbage out. So be as accurate as possible, as precise as possible, so as to have accurate output. the margin of error in the calculation process. This usually refers to the errors encountered in the conversation of in the conversion of units of measure, aggregating the table, or common calculation errors on the part of the estimators. So this could be a few of the points that need to be taken into account, that the input data is absolutely specific. There is no margin of error. There are no errors in the conversion of units measurement, etc. So these are finer things that need but have a lot of impact on the overall project. The predictability of the execution team. So again, that's one of the factors that affect the quality of estimates. So the predictability of the execution team to standard industry execution practices. So is the execution team really aware about the nature of business in the industry? Are they aware of the standard execution practices, and have they built that in the estimation cycle? So that is one of the factors that affect. How accurate or authentic are the historic data? Say if you are building the estimates basis, say a analogous model, right, where you considered results of a past project, and then you are trying to provide an estimate. So in this particular case, it depends upon how accurate or authentic are the historical data points. If say you are deploying a particular SAP module, and a particular paints manufacturer company took say 14 weeks to deploy that, is the 14 weeks of data point accurate? How accurate it is? When was that built? Were the say the codes or the modules changed post that? So if those data points are accurate, then the new estimate that you are going to run will also be accurate. Whether the stakeholders, the project planners, project manager, and all the team members are in sync with each other and work as a single cohesive unit. Unless say people have a lot of biases, a lot of conflicts within the internal teams, it will not give a desired or a qualitative output. So as I said, people might have their own biases. They might want to, you know, for external reasons, they might want to delay the project, etc. So then it doesn't really go well with the overall project execution strategy. So when the stakeholders, project planners, project managers, the internal stakeholders, and the external stakeholders in the form of, say, business owners are in sync with each other, so that the iterative process becomes all the more interesting to work on. And you can incorporate the change as they keep happening in the real world. So that's fun to work, as well as the accuracy is really high in such scenarios. Selecting estimation technique. So the evidence on differences in estimation accuracy of different estimation approaches and models suggests that there is no best approach. So as you would have heard me in some of the previous classes where we were discussing the estimation techniques, there is no one size that fits all. It doesn't have one particular approach is right. It depends upon what is the nature of work, what is the project all about, what is the work that needs to be executed, and so on. So there is no one size that fits all. There is no best approach as such. Obviously, there'll be a best approach, but then every estimation technique will have its own pros and cons. So the merits and demerits for each estimation technique has to be weighed. And depending upon the industry, depending upon the nature of work, the best has to be determined. So the relative accuracy of one approach or model in comparison to the other, as I said, strongly depends on the context. what is the nature of work, what is the industry in which it has to be performed, what is the situation in which it has to be developed. So you think like how many resources, skills of those resources, timelines, external pressures, cost adherence norms, regulatory frameworks. So these things combined or everything working as one single bunch of joint objectives would then determine which is the estimation technique that needs to be used. So different organizations benefit from different estimation approaches. As I said, there is no one single size that fits all, right? So there are two major estimation approaches. That is a expert estimation approach on the judgment of experts, and the formal estimation, which is based on the numerical formula and the historical project data. So let's look at this. So expert estimation is usually recommended where, say, the relationship between the project tasks are unstable and important project information is unavailable. So needless to say, if situations where things are not crafted in a very lucid way, or things are very loosely coupled, so that you don't have a very clearly stated information available for the project manager. Also, say if a project manager or the estimator is absolutely new or naive in terms of creating overall estimate. So in such cases, expert estimation is generally recommended, because the project manager would then rely on the opinion of the expert estimator. On the other hand, formal estimation models may be more suitable in situations where the model is catered to the organization's context. So either through the use of own historical data, or the model is derived from similar projects. If it's an analogous estimation that needs to be done, right? SAP inventory management system developed for one of the manufacturing companies, a garment manufacturing company, correct? The same to be taken to another garment manufacturer, it would work really well. In such a case situation, expert estimation model is not needed in this case, because you have an empirical model in place where the model was implemented for another company, and using that the estimates were derived. So then it becomes more prudent to use a formal estimation model in this particular scenario. So again, it's basis the context in which the estimate has to be provided. Another case where a formal estimation method is relevant is where experts' estimates will be subject to a strong degree of wishful thinking. As I said, if you anticipate a lot of human bias in a particular estimation technique by the expert estimators, that's where the use of, say, the formal estimation models are more suitable. Such formal models, if not tailored to the particular organization's own context, tend to be more accurate. I mean, obviously, we all understand that a particular model which was, say, developed in the past, it has to be tailored and customized to the specific nature of the project. I mean, it cannot be adopted in the way it has historically performed. So use of organization's own historic data is crucial to achieving the desired estimation accuracy. So what I mean by this is, suppose if there was a estimation done for one of the private sector banks, right? The same model, or say the same project, if the asset and liability module was implemented in one of the private sector banks, which now needs to be deployed to say one of the public sector banks. Then obviously you have a empirical model, you have say an analogous model saying that the asset liability management took say 16 weeks to deploy in a private bank. So this particular 16 weeks has to be tailored when it comes to deploying the same asset liability management in a say a public sector bank. It would depend upon the number of transactions, is the transaction volume high, low. More importantly, other aspects like skill set of the users, their dependency on IT, the overall skillful behavior of the people will also come into account so that the particular estimation technique works really well. So the whole point is that it has to be more customized to fit the accuracy of the other organization. So the general consensus is that a combination of estimates from independent sources, preferably using different approaches, will on average improve the overall accuracy of the estimate. So look at a different combination and then average out to have a more realistic approach. In addition, other factors such as ease of understanding, communicating the results of an approach, ease of use of a particular approach, and the cost of introducing an approach should be considered in a selection process. And over a period of time, organizations get comfortable with a specific estimation approach and they tend to stick with it unless they find a major deviation, right? So obviously, once you've worked on something and you've adapted to that particular framework, you would tend to be more comfortable with the particular approach. But all the other factors, like say, how easy that model can be, or how accurate or how the results of that approach can be easily communicated and be understood by the different team members, and the cost of introducing say an approach should be considered while selecting a estimation technique. So let us now look at some of the best practices for project estimation. The first is allow time to do a proper project estimate. Again, so if it's a absolute thing that it has to be, say, given in a matter of few minutes, etc., then we spoke about a couple of techniques that could be used, say a top-down approach, right? But the overall point is that there has to be enough amount of time given for a proper estimate to come out. Where it is possible, use documented data from your organization's own similar past projects, because this takes into account the nature of business, how the organization has been doing in the past. So it's more related to the inherent nature of work, and that's the reason why it will result into the most accurate estimate. Use developer-based estimates. So estimates prepared by people other than those who will do the work will be less accurate. So again, if say the estimates are provided by someone who's not actually going to work on the project, then it might not tend to be accurate, right? Because he or she would anticipate something which might not be achievable, so that doesn't really help. At least use one software estimation tool. Estimation tools implement complex projects that would take significant amount of time to learn to apply manually. They also make sure that you don't forget anything. So more than anything, it removes the human biases, as I keep saying. So use one software estimation tool which removes the human bias and gives a accurate result. Use several different people to estimate. So then in this way, you are not letting the human bias of one particular person affect your overall project timelines. Also, people with, say, certain hidden agenda, their estimates might not be, absolutely taken into account. So, although it might be on one extreme, once you average it compare using a standard curve, so if it's a bell curve, then you see where you have the maximum concentration or place where maximum people would have given an estimate. So you look at that particular timeline. Look at the convergence or the spread amongst the different estimates. So that's what I said. Maybe plot it over a graph. Remove the outliers if they are on the edge of the spectrum. So the convergence tells you that you have multiple different data points on that particular convergence point. So it would tend to be a good estimate. Spread means that there are probably things that have been overlooked and you need to understand better. Also, what you're doing is, say, in terms of the overall bell curve, where you have the estimates that have been given, you would look at the outliers. Maybe in certain cases, they would have certain things which have been missed out. So then it's important to look at those factors as well. The wideband Delphi approach can be used to gather and discuss estimates with a group of people. I hope you remember the wideband Delphi method, where you have the iterative method of estimation with the intention of producing an accurate, unbiased estimate. So again, this wideband Delphi could be a good method to look at our overall estimation technique. Re-estimate the project several times throughout its life cycle. Re-estimation has to be done with a set objective in mind, that what is the time and what is the effort to do the re-estimate. I would rather say, rather than doing a re-estimation, think of providing a feedback loop or looking at this more as an iterative process, where it's a continuous process to improve the estimate as the project evolves. Make a standard estimation process that everyone involved can follow. So if it's a process that has been laid out, it can be easy to follow. Focus some efforts on improving your organization's software estimation project after every project. So once you've successfully, say, delivered a project, so then I think it's important to gather the data points and also take into account what was earlier envisaged and what was the accuracy that it gave. It's important because you would learn a lot of new things about, say, your estimation techniques, if were they relevant to the nature of work. Also, it would share light on some of the internal processes, say how motivated the people are, what is the focus of the senior management, how well the work was performed under pressure, and so on. So it's important to assess what has already happened and then build that as a part of the learning curve going ahead. As each project is completed, compare actuals to the estimates, as we discussed. How well did you do in predicting the project's efforts and schedule? What were the hits? What were the misses? Say if there is a risk register that was maintained, were the risks accurately captured? Were the contingencies factored, or there was an unnecessary pad up of the different resources? Were, say, unnecessary resource blocked for a project which were never utilized in the first place? Were the cost appropriations that were made accurate? So all these points, although from a retro side, that is on a hindsight, help you to determine the approaches that you took in a particular project, were they good or not. So just to summarize, the project estimation is one of the hardest jobs that a project manager would do. Obviously, once an estimate is ready, then channelizing the resources to work on that particular estimate is also important. But the initial estimation is also one of the most critical job that a project manager has to do. Not only is it critical to the job, but the team's ability to do this well often separates the successful project from failures. Obviously, I mean, how well it is estimated determines the overall success of a particular project, right? And since it's a crucial and a complex part, there are multiple different techniques available, as we saw in the previous class as well. So these techniques have to be looked at from an overall fit perspective, in terms of situation, in terms of nature of work, in terms of the business landscape, and in terms of the industry segment, as we discussed. You can use any of the estimation techniques that you can begin implementing with your team. And then the important part is to evolve. Use the iterative feedbacks to ensure that the estimates keep evolving. Use standard templates and formats that help in creating better estimates. And there are plenty of project management software systems that can be used to make the process more collaborative. And that was what the recommendation was. Try to use one software estimation tool, which will help in the overall estimation phase. List the assumptions and, more importantly, list down the risks and the contingencies. Plan for the risks to ensure that the gap between the project estimates and deliverables is not wide. As we saw, I mean, you cannot have an absolutely accurate estimate, but it's important to try to strive towards an accurate estimate. So with this, I'd like to thank you for viewing. I hope this estimation techniques, the different nuances of the estimation techniques has been helpful to you. More importantly, we looked at some of the finer aspects about human biases, about estimation techniques, about tools, and the overall thought process behind underestimates and overestimates. With this, I'd again like to thank you for viewing, and I'll see you in the next class.